You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Okay, well, so here we go.
Yeah.
Well, welcome everybody to Curiosity Invited. My name is David Bryan, and today I have the great pleasure of speaking to somebody I've known for a long time, but not really. Andrew Carter, who is the CEO, I got that right, right? You're the CEO of Smallhold, which is, it's about mushrooms, really clear, but mushrooms for food. And I'm assuming that that's, is that the entire focus? Mushrooms for food? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Most of it is for food. We do a lot of work with our waste and stuff. We make a lot of compost, which ends up going back into the soil. And so there's additional efforts that go outside of the food realm, but most of the business is in food.
So I don't know which order to do this in or which order it'll end up on the edit, but let's start with you. And so you were not somebody, there's a question, you were not somebody who, you know, came out of the womb, like wondering about mushrooms.
No.
So when did this happen? Cause I knew you as somebody interested in music.
Yeah. Yeah. And I still am interested in music. I had a lot of interest in science when I was in high school, but I wasn't, as you mentioned, I grew up like going to school and living my life, but also playing cello and playing music and orchestras and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And when I went to college, I wanted to get as far away from LA as possible. And so I went to Vermont.
That's healthy in so many different ways.
Yeah, I think so.
It's healthy because it's LA, and it's healthy because that's where you lived. And so it's important to get away.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's healthy because Vermont is just a wonderful place as well. And it was an amazing place to go to school and meet new people. I actually met my co-founder, Adam. We were roommates in college for four years.
Say again where you went to. Where you went?
University of Vermont.
In
Burlington.
Yeah.
And
great place.
It was amazing. And I went because they had a pretty, like, actually decent music program, but then I knew I could study like science or engineering or something like that and also take all the music classes. It was weird stuff that was going through my head, but I thought I want to keep my options open. Mm-hmm. But at school, there was a lot of investment went into the environmental sciences program while I was there, and they hired a bunch of people, and they just had some really amazing professors, and I got really excited about studying environmental sciences, and so I got into that program.
Was there a focus on the science of it? Was there a focus on policy? Both? What?
Yeah, so my program was mostly science, and then I had a focus on ecological design, and so what that did was, so I studied a lot of chemistry, biology, and ecology, and then there were these classes that you could apply it to solve real world issues. And so we studied a lot of permaculture, we studied a lot of bioremediation work, so using plants and animals to filter out waste water and filter out waste soil and all that. And I didn't really work with mushrooms there, but I believe like Paul Stamets's book, Mycelium Running, came out while I was in college. And so it was really popular. Like, mushrooms are cool and all, but like the bioremediation stuff is very interesting. He did some preliminary research showing that you can use certain types of fungi to break down the pollutants in oil spills.
Yeah, amazing, really.
Really cool stuff.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of excitement in it, but I ended up graduating and moving back to Los Angeles and working at Tree People for a couple years, which is a nonprofit.
Sure.
That's a lot of tree planting. And Essentially, I wanted to do all this work with bioremediation, but I couldn't find any work doing it. And so I became an arborist with the nonprofit for a little bit. And that was for a couple of years. It was a lot of fun. I did landscaping on the side as well, and playing music all while doing all of this. So like I would play in little bands and play all around Los Angeles. And so that was just something I kind of have always been doing, a little less now. But anyway, yeah.
Did you say a little less?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a lot more going on.
Yeah, now that you're the CEO,
was like a 20-year-old
company.
Yeah. And so, anyway, like in 2009, I moved to New York. And at that point, my dad lived in New York. I think my sister was in New York at that point. And I ended up really being at the right place at the right time in New York, because in 2010 and 2011, there's always been interest in urban agriculture, I would say, in New York, but then there ended up being a lot of like private capital and like venture capital, and even like there's just different types of funding that were going into big projects to try to grow local food. It was really interesting because I think that there was coming out of like the last kind of recession situation, there was still a lot of the same interest that you find right now going on post COVID, where people were seeing a lot of issues with supply chain. They thought that maybe growing food closer to consumers was going to create a better quality product, which is totally true. I believe it. But there was a lot of interest in developing new technologies and ways of doing it. And so people were building greenhouses in New York City. They were trying to figure out how to do hydroponics in people's basements, and they needed someone who knew how to grow plants in weird ways, which is essentially what I learned how to do in college. And so I just ended up working on a bunch of crazy projects.
Did you want to learn how to grow plants in weird ways while you were in college? Because you had this thing about becoming a farmer, or why? Why was that the thrust of the ecology or the, you know, for the environmental science program, or at least why was that an offering?
Yeah. So my interest in all of this, even the mushrooms, like I have a lot of beliefs around feeding the world and all of that. And so like, I'm into that, but like what really got me into it was the idea of imitating environments. And so our planet and the climate, soil, water, everything is changing really fast. And it's, way too fast for evolution to really keep up with a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I think evolution will happen, but it's whether or not like humanity.
Our preference, our preference.
Yeah. and so
just the way we want it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think it's important for humans to figure out how to imitate the current state of our environment indoors. I thought one of those applications of that would be bioremediation. I was always interested in this, but then I found that growing food is actually a business. Like there's people that need to eat right now, and people want to eat local and efficiently grown food. And so there's businesses that are available to sort of like help me kind of go down that path and understand how to build environments indoors. In that way.
No, I am naive to this, but there's an amazing sort of blossoming of interest in mushrooms. I mean, how long has that been? Or was it always, and I just didn't know about it, because the only mushrooms I knew as a kid was those ones that came in the can.
Yeah.
but it, like, to what do you attribute this sort of explosion in certain ways of interest in mushrooms for food?
Yeah, it's in the United States, it's definitely like a new wave, and there have been waves in the past. And so historically in the United States mushroom industry, mushrooms have existed, but most of the commercial mushroom production is agaricus, and that is a white little button you find in a can or on pizza.
Right.
As well as the cremini mushroom, as well as the portobello mushroom. They're all the same mushroom, just grown at different stages. But fungi are a kingdom. It's like plants are a kingdom, animals are a kingdom. The differences between some of these mushrooms are like the difference between like an acorn and a strawberry and like a plant that lives in the ocean. You know, they're very different. But most of the consumers in the US are just eating one mushroom. And we don't actually eat that much. And so like US, they think it's like 2 to 3 pounds per person per year is the consumption. Apparently in China, it's like 20 to 30 pounds per person per year.
Are they easier to grow than other things?
Easier and harder. There's different things. So they lend themselves to growing indoors. They are very resource efficient because they grow, if you grow in my opinion, the right way, you grow on waste streams. And so you grow on waste from the timber industry, or you can grow on chicken scratch, you can grow on all sorts of stuff. And so it lends itself to places where people are trying to figure it out, but then there's also just so many health benefits, and not only like, you know, you can get into the medicinal uses, but just at its very base level, it's like very clean source of calories. There's decent little bit of protein in there. And you don't have to like grow a whole animal to have the kind of nutrition that you can get from these things.
Yeah.
And so it makes sense for everyone, but I think that there's certain regions that kind of figured it out a little bit earlier. And then they also marketed it in different ways that allowed the industry to grow. And in the US, like it wasn't until like the 90s, shiitakes kind of started happening. That was the first like non-button mushroom.
Right.
And then there's also a period around there when portobello steaks, that was like a big marketing campaign. Essentially, it's kind of like kale, where they were like, let's make portobello burgers. And they're good, but it was like there was a group of people that made that happen. But what's happening right now is really interesting. We kind of thought this was going to happen because the increase of demand in specialty mushrooms, but anything but buttons, was increasing. But when COVID hit, it went absolutely insane. So again, going back to a lot of these mushrooms, the specialty mushrooms, they don't ship that well. Mushrooms themselves, if they're old, they don't really make you sick or anything. They kind of dry out. It's not like meat or something where you'll get ill if you eat a mushroom. But the experience is so much better when you get a fresh one. It's more colorful. I mean, there's colors like it's yellow, pink, blue oysters, it's just beautiful mushrooms. And when you get them fresh, it's just a completely different experience. And so we want to grow those as close as possible to consumers so they can experience what like these mushrooms should be experienced like.
Were you looking, were you and your business partner, were you looking for, let's give him a name just so there's there. What's his name?
Adam.
Adam. Okay. So were you and Adam looking for a business to start? Did you say,
we're always kind of like scheming things. Like tried building drones for a little bit before drones were, we were like building like our own. They were very dangerous, but they flew a couple of times. And so we like tried things out. Like we always like had this idea that we would build something, but we weren't like truly seeking for a business. Like both of us had our own careers that we were pursuing. And he came from the data privacy world and worked on a bunch of different startups that had some really interesting experiences. But that one of my best ways of coping is just kind of like filling my time doing a lot of things. And since I had a lot of experience growing stuff, I was in this space for a while. There was a basement. I was interested in growing mushrooms. And so I started just growing mushrooms on the weekends and just figuring out how to grow trumpets on straw, which was a horrible idea. It's very difficult. It looked crazy. It was like plastic wrap everywhere, pressure cookers. Like people would come in to go fix things, and they would intentionally not ask any questions because it looked like I was definitely it was like a mix of like Dexter like murder room and like drug making. But we were growing mushrooms, was trying. What ended up happening is I met up with a friend of mine and he had a space in Brooklyn that was by the Domino factory. And so in Williamsburg, it's like a very gentrified area. There's a big sugar factory there. And they've now turned it into just, there's buildings everywhere, but there's a big park there. Before the park came, a bunch of the neighborhood got really like frustrated about what was going to come from Two Trees. And so Two Trees went out and got Ryan, as well as a few other people, to build this temporary like event space and farm space. And so they grew food, they had like cool events. And then I convinced Ryan to let me put a shipping container there to grow mushrooms. It was like literally a decision that I made like on a weekend. Like we were hanging out and I was like, I want to put a shipping container there. It's like, let's do it. The next weekend I bought a shipping container, and then we like essentially moved everything from Mount Kisco down to Brooklyn, which is just crazy. Everything is so crazy. This is in like 2015, 2016. But it was really cool. It was like tiled, it got all foggy, it grew some cool mushrooms, but ended up being very small. But it got a lot of exposure, and Adam is helping me just kind of like help me out here and there. And we ended up finding a bunch of restaurants that were into our mushrooms. And then we were like trying to talk to people about investment, but people thought we were crazy. And we ended up applying for a couple accelerators, and we got into one called Techstars. And we got into that in January 2017. And so we just quit our jobs and decided to go and like do this. And so they invested some money in the business. We ended up hiring Hannah, who I'm pointing out outside, because she's outside. Yeah, but right. She's
I see her.
She was our play number one, still with us. And we just went for it at that point. And
so it's really recent. That I guess I didn't have that sense. It's really recent.
Thanks. I mean, in 2015, it's been a lot, but yeah.
Yeah, well, it's,
a lot of the growth. So the business growth.
As your hair gets this color,
I know, sorry.
Time shrinks.
Yeah. No, it is. It's been a whirlwind, and like we built out a bunch of technology. We have like patents on this computer system, essentially, that we built that helps us grow the mushrooms, and. We built for
what, small. What does that mean? What does that? Don't give me any secrets where you'll have to kill me. Something. What does that mean? You built technology is it the timing of when things are fed? Is it the amount of light? Is it like, what is it?
Yeah. So it's essentially like very complicated climate control. And so the mushrooms that we grow, they get their nutrition from the substrate, which is mostly sawdust, again, from like the timber world. So we spent a lot of effort and time building out essentially like this crazy climate control system that allows it to grow really beautiful mushrooms. We're certified organic, we're zero pesticide, all this stuff. Like
I'm sorry I keep interrupting, but I'm so curious. I am curious. But you grow a variety of different mushrooms. Do most mushrooms or all mushrooms require similar sorts of environments?
So mushrooms are like plants and like humans, honestly, in that they can grow in lots of kinds of environments, but when you want it to be efficient and super healthy and like grow a lot of consistent product, then there's so many differences between each of the varieties.
Right.
And so like, we sell kits for people to grow mushrooms at home. We did it. It was a big thing during COVID, but so like you can grow a blue oyster on your counter and spray it every now and then, and it'll probably fruit. Like it fruits a decent amount of mushrooms. But we grow thousands and thousands of those blocks every day, and we need all of those to fruit and all of those to produce a certain amount. Yes. And so that turns into like a whole different kind of operation. It's like basil you can grow in your counter also, but when it's at scale, and humans can exist in all sorts of places, but there's different ways to help everyone thrive. The environment, like we have all these sensors, we're capturing all this data. They have different climate recipes for each of these varieties. And then we have different ways that we manage substrate throughout the space. That is kind of what the patent is around. But then we also have additional IP just around like, or intellectual property around the use of different types of equipment to manage that air. It's in one way, it's very cool that it's air management rather than like tons of light. That's what I used to do in the plant world. That is kind of the problem with the plant world and a lot of the indoor situations, because that's very energy intensive. We do use energy for cooling and stuff like that, but it's not nearly as energy intensive as the plant production. And so we do a few different things. We started with these on-site productions. We call them mini farms. And so it's an application of the technology where you can like go into Whole Foods in Brooklyn, for example, and it looks like this crazy refrigerator that grows mushrooms that are harvested, put on the shelf, zero packaging, really fresh, really cool. They're in all central markets in Texas. We're going to install some in Los Angeles too.
And it's actually beautiful. I mean, it really is. The pictures of them, they're beautiful. I mean, they really are. They're beautiful to look at. They're so sort of interesting, surreal, and beautiful. It's great. So you're welcome. But where you are in Brooklyn,
right?
It's a building. It's a
So most of the business are packaged mushrooms that are in. I have a here that are in these like compostable cardboard clamshells, and those are grown in warehouse farms that we've built. And so we have one in Brooklyn that we built in 2020. That's our smallest one. That's around 3,000 square feet. And then we built two in Texas. We built originally a small space like that size that we thought we started with selling to one grocery store. We sold out immediately. And so we built a way larger one. That one's about 26,000 square feet.
Oh, wow.
And then we just built one in Vernon that's 36,000 square feet. And that's in Los Angeles. We like lease spaces for long-term leases. Yeah, and then we go and build out all of our equipment inside. And it's fairly modular, so you can spin them up pretty quickly. They look crazy. They look like a spaceship. The mini farms for a long time, even some of those on websites, like literally I built those things with my hands. And then we now have an engineering team and we now have domestic contract manufacturing. And so for those, how it works is we get orders and then we can produce, they're produced on the Northeast. Right. And so then they build those, like we're not building those necessarily.
Got it.
But it's a big, it's a big facility. And so there's various people that come together to help.
This is a beginner question, the beginner's question. So do you remember the whole kombucha phase that was sort of taking over the world? And everybody was, on top of their refrigerator, they had their mushroom growing and. How does one, how do you start a mushroom? I mean, like you put it in this substance, a tiny little piece, and how does that work?
Right. Yeah. So it depends on how you want to do it, but commercially how the mushrooms that we grow work.
Yeah.
You get raw material, which is mostly sawdust. And so it's mostly hardwood sawdust. And so like we're usually working with oak. But there are different mushrooms that grow on different varieties, kind of depends on what you have access to.
Sure.
And then you supplement it with other natural materials. So like wheat bran and rye berries, organic cottonseed hull, if you can find it. And there's different mixes for each variety because they want different nutrition. And then that is hydrated. So you put a little water in there and then it's sterilized. And so or sterilized or pasteurized, again, depending on the variety. And so what you're trying to do is kill off anything that would compete with the mushroom that you're trying to grow.
Right.
Because it's a fungus. There are other fungi that are way more.
And fungus are very, very successful.
Yeah, exactly. And so you don't want those growing. And so that has to be done in a very clean space. You do it either with an autoclave or there's steam prep pasteurization that you can do. And then those are inoculated with the mycelium that you're going to grow. And so the mycelium itself is grown out usually on agar plates. It's very scientific, but it is also kind of a naturally occurring process, but you're culturing the mushrooms. And so you genetically, you have a very similar genetics across the crop that you grow out that mycelium either in liquid culture or in little chunks. And then you put little tiny pieces of that mycelium in those big blocks of sawdust, And then it takes about 3 or 4 weeks and the mycelium completely envelops the sawdust. It's digesting it. The mycelium is kind of like an inside out stomach. It releases enzymes and breaks down all of the sawdust. And then once it's fully white, like it was like a brown, like square, then it turns into this big white square. And then at that point, it's ready to go in one of these fruiting areas because it needs to be exposed to this special environment. And so how you kind of imagine it is like a tree falls in the woods and then a spore would kind of fly and land on the tree and then it would germinate and then start to create mycelium. And that can germination can kind of happen on its own. And then once the mycelium eats enough of the tree and is close to the surface of that fallen tree, then it's exposed to the exterior environment and then a mushroom would come out. And so what we're trying to do is imitate that exterior environment that you'd find in like a forest. And so it's usually cooler temperatures, very high humidity, a lot of airflow. Unfortunately, all of those things kind of work against each other. High humidity and cool temperature is very hard. And then all of those things, if you have a lot of airflow, you're blowing it out. And so it's a lot of energy consumption if you don't do it right. And so again, like on the technology we developed allows us to be very efficient with all of those parameters, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Wow, it's fascinating. And food-wise, nutrition-wise, so enormous variety in the mushrooms that are grown. And enormous variety in vitamins, nutritional elements that they produce?
I mean, it depends on what you're looking for. There are certain things that are across all of the mushrooms, and I'm not a nutritionist, and so like I don't know tons about it, but I know that pretty much all mushrooms are fairly anti-inflammatory. There's a lot that are more, so shiitake or reishi mushrooms are very popular. Right. People going through chemotherapy, they are have way more anti-inflammatory properties, for example. Some mushrooms have more protein than others. Trumpets seem to have a lot more protein than other mushrooms. And then there are some exciting mushrooms that have things that other mushrooms don't have, like lion's mane have these, a lot of research that shows that it can help with people with brain plaque, which helps with memory loss and our short-term memory retention, different things like that. What I get most excited about are the antioxidants in mushrooms. And so there's one called ergothionine, which is really only found in mushrooms. You can find it in other kinds of crops, but only because they have some relationship with fungi in the roots. And what's cool about it is it's bioavailable with one serving of fresh mushrooms. And so this is like the tricky thing with all things is that like you might get excited about some food that might help you do things. Again, I'm not a nutritionist, but I know for a fact that some of this stuff, like you have to consume a ridiculous amount of it, or it has to be extracts, or it's hard to actually get the full benefit of that.
Benefit of this product. Thing that is in there, yes.
Yeah, but with these antioxidants that are in mushrooms, if you just eat one serving a week, then you have got a lot of antioxidants, which is just really powerful when people are trying to be smart about what they put in their bodies. But like at its base level, how I look at it is like a lot of our consumers are eating less meat because they're eating mushrooms. And I'm not a vegan. I eat meat sometimes. So like, I'm not trying to judge or anything, but I do think our society needs to eat less meat. And so a lot of people are finding that they can get that savory feeling, that umami that they would get from chicken or beef or any of that. And
from various mushrooms, right?
Yeah, and so it's nutritious and all that kind of stuff, but like scrap all that, this is like a very sustainable way of feeding your family that I want to bring out into the world.
And do you have any way of knowing whether or not, you know, most of the end consumers, or at least some percentage of the end consumers, are doing it because they want to cut back on their animal product consumption? Is there any data?
Yeah.
I mean, we can geek out about data all the time, but I can tell you do. But I'm wondering if that stuff is available.
Yeah, not as much data as we want to be able to say like definitively that that's what's happening, but we do talk to a lot of people. We do, so it's like way more qualitative, I would say. So small holds, like we do demos constantly. And so demos are like when you go into a store and you see people cooking and like giving you samples.
Yeah.
That's a really good point of contact. And then we do a lot of work also like doing different surveying and trying to understand what people are why people are buying the product. And
I just like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of it. I think that there are, I also think that people might not realize that they're eating less meat, but the big thing is that a lot of people are using it as a main course rather than something that's kind of like sprinkled on a salad or something like that.
Right.
So you can cook these things and it's the main thing you eat that night, which means a lot of people are probably not eating meat because a lot of people eat meat always on that.
You bet. It's like if it's not, where's the meal, right? People feel like it's where's the meal, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's exciting. I think that a lot of people are trying to experiment with what they eat. I think that like people want to be healthy. People want to be vegetarian, flexitarian, whatever.
Absolutely.
I also think the next trend is like carbon friendly eating. Like people are going to start getting guilted about having a bunch of plastic in their shopping cart and having like really crazy carbon footprint kinds of food. And so as that kind of progresses, then more people will try to eat mushrooms as long as they understand that that's something that's good about them. But I think the biggest thing is just like people are trying new things. Like I think because of like TikTok and whatever social media and exposure, this is like
you're sort of like doing guerrilla ecology. I mean, you did study environmental science. You did, and there's usually that whole field grew out of the insight and the wisdom that hey, you know, we can't keep trashing this thing, and you're not shoving it, well, no metaphor, the metaphor is there. You're not shoving it down people's throats, but you're really doing this thing that is clearly in that pushing in that direction, or it's moving in that direction. I don't know if you're pushing in that direction, but people should see how beautiful, it really is magnificent to look at the growing of the mushrooms and the growing of mushrooms. It's really something.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally what we're trying to do, because I've worked for a lot of companies who like the first thing they lead with is like the world's on fire, there's not enough land, the population is not, like we don't have the capacity to feed everyone. And some of it's true, some of it's questionable, but it is a problem that we have to solve. But it doesn't make anyone want to eat these products.
No, it actually does. So, it just well, people eat less because they're on the floor depressed.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you want to like people have fun and to like enjoy things. And then like if you lead with that and people get into it that way, and then they like learn that it is also something that answers all these other questions that they're looking for, then like that's amazing. I think that's the best way of building something in this.
Yeah, it's really, really fabulous. So without telling me anything that you'd have to kill me because you told me, as you look into the future, are you developing, other than new technology or other than more efficient ways of doing what you're doing, is small hold sort of reaching for things that they haven't done well, whether it's different products or different ways of selling it or what? I mean, is there that going on?
Yeah, there's lots of stuff going on. I mean, we are building more capacity in different regions. And so it's like, you know, there's certain groups in certain cities that might be familiar with blue oysters or lion's mane mushrooms or shiitake or maitake mushrooms, but there's a lot of people who aren't. And so we want to bring those to as many people as possible. And then increasing, like we're doing a lot of work on new varieties that we can bring and we can grow in these formats. And then also other kinds of products that we can create with the mushrooms that we grow.
You mean other sorts of, don't tell me.
It's okay, food products.
That's the idea. Made of mushrooms.
Yes. Yeah. And so there's all the, you know, there's people doing different things. The stuff that we're playing around with are definitely different than what everyone else is doing. Like, we're not making jerky, or we're not making like coffee. You know, I think that what's amazing about mushrooms, they can kind of exist in almost every food category. Fungi can kind of exist in any category. People are building buildings out of it, making toys out of it. I don't know. There's
wait, what? Maybe,
yeah, you can build. I mean, yeah, there's whole companies that work on building. Well, they can make structural materials out of mycelium.
Wow.
That's yeah. And so, I mean, yeah, there's people.
Do mushrooms, I know it's not a plant, but so plants lend themselves to, you know, to being hybridized. Do mushrooms, like, can you develop new mushroom types?
Yeah, it's different, but yes, you can. I mean, it's more, usually people are working on the same type of mushroom, but with different traits. And that's usually done through culturing. There is a lot of breeding that goes on in the space, but mm-hmm. it's very different than with plants.
Right.
The
you mean how it's done. Right.
But yeah.
Right.
In a lot of ways, mushrooms are exciting because they grow a lot faster, and a lot of the work can actually be done faster. Like, you can take a culture of a mushroom and have a plate out within a week, and then you can grow off of that. Yeah. And so, you can do a lot of this hybridization and breeding with a lot shorter period than if you're trying to do that with plants without using too much stuff, but you can also do it that way if you want. You know, there's not a whole lot of technically like genetic modification work. There's a lot of like, we don't use any GMO products or anything. Most food is most specialty crops aren't GMO. That's like the whole funny thing right now. Are you like GMO free salad? Doesn't really make sense because there's no GMO salad that's commercially available.
It's like gluten-free grapefruit.
Yeah, exactly. But there's a lot of research with CRISPR, which is like a newer type of modification stuff. And mm-hmm. there's work going into the mushroom space with that, mainly with buttons, but I'm sure it'll, you know, go into the specialty world at some point. But
things like, that's a shocker to me to hear that people are using mushrooms, growing mushrooms, whatever, to create building materials. And I mean, would one know? Like, if one saw a mushroom brick, a mushroom, I don't mean.
I mean, I would know. I'm trying to see. Know. I don't have any here. I have, what's funny is I have, it's visual, so anyone listening can't see it, but give me a second here. We have some friends that make mycelium leather. There's like, so there's building materials, but then there's groups that make leather out of it. And so this is from MycoWorks, which is like, they're pretty well established mycelium leather thing. The front of ours is like a little visor out of it. But it looks like leather. I mean, it's like, it's pretty amazing. And so they're like working with like Stella McCartney and all these kinds of things.
And it's dirty. It's
a leather. Sturdy-ish. I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's pretty good. You know, I think that I think all these companies have stuff to work on, obviously, but it's that's becoming commercialized, which is cool. I think with the mycelium bricks and insulation is what a lot of people are working on too. Once you know what you're looking for, you could probably recognize it, but usually it's behind a wall or something mm-hmm. like that.
Sure. Well, that's fascinating. That piece is really something. That's wild. What's something dazzling? I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but what's something that, you know, that's sort of dazzling about mushrooms that folks just don't know? I mean, like before you brought up, I mean, now it's, I guess it's fairly widespread. Well, maybe not, you know, that fungi can be used or has been used to break down pollutants of all sorts, right? So, which is, you know, I remember when I first heard about that, maybe, you know, I walked away hopeful. It was like, oh, there's stuff going on in this world. It's like, so are there things that about mushrooms that sort of just are really are dazzling?
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. It's not necessarily about mushrooms that I grow, but they're one of the things that I learned recently is like, so the mushrooms we grow, when I explained how to grow mushrooms, that's a specific kind of mushroom. They're called saprotrophic mushrooms. And so they're digesters. Like, again, like it's like your stomach breaking down stuff.
Yes.
There are lots of different relationships with the environment that other fungi can have, but one of them is a mycorrhizal mushroom, which is kind of like it's like when people talk about the World Wide Web, Wood Wide Web, and like trees communicating with each other.
Yes,
and,
sure.
That is mycorrhizal fungi. And what it is plants have their roots, and then this fungi creates a relationship with that root either by enveloping it or injecting itself in the roots. And then the fungi can grow way faster than the roots. And so they end up helping the tree bring in water, and then the tree gives it sugar. And that's how chanterelles grow. That's how truffles grow. That's how matsutake grow. Most of the mushrooms that you find when they're foraged are usually mycorrhizal mushrooms. And humans have really not figured out how to grow these. Like, you can sort of have a truffle farm. Truffle farms will tell me that they know what they're doing, but it's absolutely not in controlled environments. It's kind of hit or miss for a lot of people. And people aren't growing chanterelles are really indoors. People are starting to figure out morels, but they have their own kind of relationship with the mm-hmm. environment. But anyway, this relationship is everywhere. And so a majority of plants have this, like over 90% of plants have a mycorrhizal relationship. They don't all fruit, but like, you know, the grass in your lawn or like any sort of tree, it has a relationship with fungi. It's very odd when it doesn't. And that's like
it's webbing together the world.
Yeah. Well, it's like, so where what I found really interesting is there's a lot of theories that when plants kind of like started coming out of the ocean during like really early planetary days and when life started coming onto land, that the roots didn't really exist, that they kind of came, the roots themselves are just more of a habitat for this kind of fungi. And then as evolution kind of went on, then some plants ended up making bigger roots that could potentially exist without this mycelium. Right. Yeah. But if that is the case, then it kind of goes to this thing where you're like, are plants and fungi really separate? Like, why are we even really separating them? And then in my head, it's always like, it goes back to humans where you're like, humans wouldn't be like, we're just like walking bags of bacteria and fungi. Right. And yeah. So like, and then we're in this planet. And so what is the separation really? And you know, when you're studying science a lot, there's a lot of work on like creating language and using words to explain all of this. And so you have to separate things, but you know, once you realize that these things have existed symbiotically for their entire existence, you kind of question why we separate them.
Absolutely. It's that, you know, it's those that it shows up in so many different places, but you know, whether it's the extraordinary photography of that where people were taking pictures of the organisms on people's eyelids,
sure. You know,
these bestial tiny microscopic things that, without which you wouldn't be able to see. Or I'm trying to remember, what was it, Lives of a Cell, where you're sort of in the middle of reading it, you're kind of like, well, are we carrying bacteria, or bacteria actually allowing us to exist? I mean, yeah, it's that, you know, so. Was it Michael Pollan's book, where he wrote a book about essentially from the plant's point of view?
Okay, probably. Yeah,
I think it was. I'm trying to remember what the name of it was, but there's that, you know, whose story is this anyway?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why, like, whenever I'm like trying to teach people about mushrooms, even, because we do a lot of education at Smallhold and I try to help people out. And I think the most important thing you can do when you're educating about science is it's like, this is just like, these are just human English words and trying to explain something that we probably can't fully explain.
Right.
And there's even different perspectives, like how I'm explaining this is the perspective of someone cultivating mushrooms, like a mycologist that goes foraging in the woods. They would have a completely different way of explaining the relationship of these organisms with the environment.
Yeah,
exactly. And so, you know, it's important. Yeah.
Whose story is this?
Dude. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Dude. Well, so what else should I ask you about mushrooms or small hold or anything else?
I mean, we like, you know.
I hope I haven't asked all the same questions that everybody asks, because it's gonna be boring from your point of view.
No. These are great. Yeah. Most people ask like the very basic stuff. I mean, we sell mushrooms in various grocery stores, and so I have to plug that.
Sure. Can people buy the products? There's no selling directly to people, or is there?
Not the mushrooms, but you can get grow kits online. And so that's something we did during COVID. It was when it started here, when there was the pot. So backing up, like small hold, we have investors, we're like a venture-backed business, and we were fairly early stage for a while. I would say we're still early stage. We were a lot earlier when COVID started. And we ended up closing a little bit of investment like 3 days before the pause happened. And it was not because of COVID. It was just kind of like we wanted to raise a little more money. And then we were like, we want to hit some milestones, and like some goals for the business. And we ended up closing a little bit of investment. We had this like moment of clarity for the weekend, and then every one of our customers just disappeared, and we were a team of like 12 people or something when that happened. And we had mini farms. We didn't even have a big farm or anything, because we didn't have the capacity we didn't have any money to build a big farm, and so we were doing these installations everywhere. And then we started just like, we had mushrooms growing in our own offices because we were like experimenting with a bunch of stuff. So we had a lot of mushrooms, and we had this van. And so then we just started going and like selling mushrooms everywhere. We would just pop up the van, put it on Instagram. People would get mushrooms from us. We made a little Google sheet that people could sign up for drop-offs. And it was like this really cool, I mean, it was completely screwed up, but it was kind of crazy. Like just driving around, blasting music, dropping off mushrooms to people. And then we started, because we grow mushrooms on these commercial blocks, we just started giving them to people, mainly people who couldn't afford the mushrooms. We gave a lot of mushrooms out because a lot of our friends were in the restaurant space, which were really affected. And so we would sell mushrooms, and then we would give away a lot of mushrooms, and then we would give away a lot of blocks. And then people started putting it on Instagram, like them growing their mushrooms, which ended up being like the best quarantine activity possible. And we ended up just like making this giant viral activity around grow kits. And we got covered in Bon Appetit, and they asked us if we were,
there it is.
They're like, are you in New York or are you in Nationwide? Because this is a Nationwide thing. We have to say that you can get grow kits from someone else. And we're like, we'll figure it out. We're Nationwide.
Nationwide, so, of course. Like,
and so then like overnight, I like figured out how to make a Shopify, and Adam like figured out all the supply chain stuff. And then the next day it went live, and we sold like a ridiculous amount of kits. I mean, like $70,000 for the kits, like in 2 days, which is
very meaningful. What does a kit look like? What is it consist?
Yeah, it's like
a countertop thing?
I don't have one here. Yeah, well, no, I mean, it looks, if you look at a website and you see those like blocks of white stuff, it's just one of those. We'll ship you one of those. And you spray it with water, honestly, as much as you can kind of remember, but 2 to 3 times a day usually is enough, unless it's very dry where you are.
Yeah.
And then the mushrooms pop out, and they grow really quickly. They grow after they, like, as soon as it starts like popping out of the bag, then it's like within 6 or 7 days, it's like a huge mushroom. And so it was this like, because plants take a long time to grow.
And is it perpetual or no? It, you know, it one crop and that's like, it?
most people get like two or three flushes of mushrooms out of them. Some people got like six or seven out of them. It's like a whole different level of work to get a lot of it out of it. But it's a lot of mushrooms and it's a crazy experience. Like, it's like, it looks crazy. And so anyway, it became this big thing and it made us like kind of like this national brand. It got in like New York Times and all this crazy stuff. And then about halfway through 2020, then all these grocery stores started coming out of the woodworks saying that like people are coming out the grocery store, and then the mushrooms were hot now. And so then we started building our big facilities and we grew from there. And so now we're a lot bigger. Anyway, that's our direct to consumer thing. We do have some t-shirts and stuff that our friends designed, but if you want the fresh mushrooms, you have to get them at a local grocery store or, you know, depending on where you are, we're in like Misfits and Imperfect and Good Eggs and Fresh Direct.
Well, I'm hoping you guys, well, since you're nationwide, I know you'll ship to Wyoming, but like.
Well, we don't ship to Wyoming. So that's the thing. So sorry.
Is that true?
We aren't nationwide. I apologize. I may have said that wrong. We try to distribute within the regions that we're in. And so if you're in the Southwest region, you can buy our mushrooms. So that's like LA into Arizona.
No, I meant the kits.
Oh, sorry. The kits you can get everywhere. I'll ship you again.
Cool.
sorry about that. But the fresh stuff, if you get a treat.
No, I get it. Yeah, I'm sure. You want the fresh mushroom. Absolutely. That's so great. Well, what fun. I mean, I get that it's work, but it's fun learning about it and it's fun hearing about it.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's fun. It's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot to manage, but it's
good. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to be respectful of your time. I know you're a busy guy, et cetera, and you have that, and you have a young child, which you have to get home to.
Yeah.
Cool. So Andrew Carter from Smallhold, thank you so much for being willing to have this conversation. So fun. And it's so good to see you after all these years.
It's great to see you too. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.